Hi, welcome to the Georgia Politics Podcast. I'm Joseph G of Monotonous.net and Doraville.org. We are here today to talk about Georgia politics. And with me are...
Garrett Vonk from GarrettVonk.com.
Joe Winter from JoeVentures.com and BlogLanta.com.
And Randy Lewis from GeorgiaDailyDigest.com and GeorgiaPoliticalDigest.com.
Well, this has actually been a pretty interesting past couple of weeks for Georgia politics, I think. Election season is heating up. I actually wanted to start with something that happened 4 years ago. There's a recent article in the October 6th issue of Rolling Stone, which talks about the voter machines that we have here in Georgia, the Diebold machines that Kathy Cox installed. Basically, it kind of questions who actually had control of these machines and whether or not we can know what the votes were. And while I'm inclined to disbelieve conspiracy theories or that anyone won a particular election unfairly, the article basically says that the Secretary of State just handed the keys for the election over to Diebold in the months preceding the election. And right now, having just read this article, I'm still a little bit outraged. And I just wanted to throw that out there for discussion.
Well, elections are imperfect events. And it you can go back to the paper ballot, which allowed a very low-tech box stuffing of paper. The Shoup voting machine, which was supposed to be the answer to that, which was at one time in a courtroom rigged with a paper clip that allowed, they opened the back of it, they wedged a paper clip in, and it allowed votes to count for the other person. From where the lever was being pulled, you now have the Diebold machines. They're clearly inadequate. They don't meet it. I don't believe that there's any vast political conspiracy to steal elections with it, but it's always possible for someone to do it, and you're almost always surprised as to who it was that tried it. The perfect machine is going to be some combination of technology and an analog life that combines the two of them. It probably is the machines that are used in Florida now, which are optical scanners. But the sooner the state can move away from this, the better. You need to have a permanent record. It's government, and remember, government can't function without paper, so we need paper.
What do you think about maybe an addition of printers? That's the big thing that I've been hearing about this week from Kathy Cox's office, is something like $20 million to install printers on all of these machines.
I would definitely go along with Randy on the idea that certainly there is no such thing as a perfect election, but we do have to work toward forming a more perfect election, kind of akin to forming a more perfect union, of course. Whether that's printing out, a paper verification or going back to the optical scanners, we actually had those in Cobb County just before, and they were, it seemed fine to me. It felt like taking the SAT.
Yeah. And it creates a paper record. I was told at one point that when the Secretary of State's office was considering the bids, the one they ultimately selected, of course, was the Diebold machine, but that the reason that they did not select the optical scanner process was really just because she didn't like the lobbyist that was pitching the contract and representing. The Secretary of State, Kathy Cox, didn't like the lobbyist that was representing the optical scanner company.
Oh, that's a good enough reason, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's how government works.
Well, the other thing that, that kind of brings up another thing that came out of the article is that the Diebold machines were not even the cheapest bid, apparently. They're probably the highest priced competitor, so I'm not really sure how much government oversight there really was over this process. It was just kind of a feel-good, hey, we're voting on, touch screens now.
And we're advancing the e-government revolution.
Right. Yeah, and unfortunately, technology does that a lot. People see some flash and some glitz, and they see something occurring that looks fascinating and wonderful, and they don't give it a lot of thought. The only thing I'm going to say about the printed ballot or the paper receipt or whatever you want to call it, I think in order for it to be credible, whatever paper there is has to be voter-generated paper. It can't be machine-generated paper. So just adding a paper receipt onto a machine you have no confidence in is not going to create confidence. What you have to do is go to a system where the voter creates the paper ballot that then becomes counted using some technology. But it has to have their fingerprints on it.
Okay. That's a figurative fingerprints, correct?
Yeah, figurative and literally, yeah.
Okay, well, besides voting machines, there's also a lot of news this week about the Beltline and the fact that the developer who owned a lot of the land around the, I guess it was around 10th Street, has said that he's pulling out right now. And the future of the Beltline looks a little bit hazy right now, and I'm just kind of wondering, especially from Joe, who was at the meeting where this happened, where it looks like the Beltline is right now, and what maybe we should expect to see in the future.
Yeah, there were really a number, an awful lot of meetings that went on, where the developers' representatives, most notably the lawyer Hakeem Hilliard, did quite a job going to all of these different meetings, all the NPUs, neighborhood associations, pitching the development over and over again. Some of these NPUs, went back to them multiple times. The particular meeting in question where all of this culminated was a city council committee hearing where the planning folks from the city of Atlanta made their recommendation to the city council, which was sort of a conditional denial of the applications. But it was also the chance for the developers to make their final pitch. It was the chance for the neighborhood associations to make their final pitch. And through this whole meeting, I really kind of wanted to stand up and say, you are all being really stupid here. Because it was, everyone from the very beginning really dug in their heels about what they wanted to see done with this land and how and what the design, et cetera, et cetera. Wayne Mason hired a planner who had come from a very progressive planning firm from Atlanta. He hired out Roy Barnes. He eventually hired out, at least she was there to speak. It was Hattie Dorsey, who's a fairly big player in Democratic politics in Georgia, and most notably has been a very big proponent of affordable housing in Atlanta. And I really felt like these folks were giving up a lot of the things they really stood for in their professional lives by speaking out in favor of Wayne Mason's development. The development, while being high density development, they insisted on it getting built before the transit, and they insisted on putting in nearly three times as many parking spaces as there were units in the towers in Piedmont Park. It was essentially a very high density car oriented development.
Are they talking about putting the parking spaces in there? Were they talking about like basically building on top of them?
Or? Yeah, it would be building on top of them.
Okay.
and and it was just on its face, that by itself is a pretty ridiculous proposal, in my opinion. But I really felt like the neighborhoods got to be pretty ridiculous too in how they dealt with the whole ideal, development. They talk a lot about preservation of the neighborhood, keeping it low density, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, we're getting a lot of people moving into Atlanta. Every single credible outlook of what Atlanta is going to look like in the next 25 years is showing that we're going to get more growth, and we have to put these people somewhere. You know, near transit stations is going to be some of the best places to put in the density. That's where the transit's going to go, is along the Beltline.
Yeah, I have not followed this nearly as close as you, Joe, but as somebody who lives outside the perimeter, one of the things that has really struck me since I moved here 6 years ago is this whole notion of sprawl, and it's sort of public enemy number one in Atlanta. If you live outside the perimeter, you're sort of an evil part of everything that's wrong with Atlanta. And here we have a developer who's attempting to develop high density in an area that would also create an extension, or at least a network that would build into mass transit. And all of those inside the perimeter, I'll go ahead and call them lefties, you know, turned on this fellow and did everything they could to undermine this. And now suddenly they want low density, which is which means sprawl. So what I saw in watching this process was everything that I had been told when I first moved here, and that is, don't live in the city of Atlanta. It is the worst government you can imagine. It has terrible leadership, terrible boards, terrible committees, and anything you want to do, they will figure out some way to hose you to death in the process. All of that's been reinforced by watching this from the outside. I'm glad he withdrew his permit, and now he needs to go even further and be completely petulant and build something in the path of the rail, so that you know he can, or at least propose it, so that he can send a message loud and clear to the mayor that, you know, she needs to become engaged or she needs to move on.
Do you think that the mayor is going to pull it out, either one of you, be able to get this deal to happen, or do you think it's pretty much dead, nothing?
I haven't watched it that close. I think, you know, just based on how politics functions, the city's going to have to probably be the one that comes back and makes the on their hands and knees and begs for.
Yeah, the next few weeks is going to be Wayne Mason's real shot at showing Atlanta how egotistical he is. You know, will he do kind of what Randy was talking about? Will he propose putting something up in the way of the right of way? I certainly hope not. Will there be a chance for everyone to come back to the table? I don't know. It's kind of like, I kind of think of a divorced couple, and I saw the most interesting, it was kind of an anonymous note one time that was submitted to some website that takes in these sorts of notes, and the husband, or the former husband, commented in this note that all he wanted was a really good chance to say I love you again. And I really think all of these parties are a lot closer if you know than they really are. You know, I mean, Wayne Mason could build something that is profitable to him, that the neighborhoods would like, and I have no, you know, I think everyone understands that the density's got to go somewhere, and the Beltline's going to be the best place for it.
But not in my backyard. Right?
But yeah, I'm, you know, being a Midtown resident, I, you know, let me just take a moment to say yes in my backyard. I do want it there. but you know, at the same time, there is something to be said for the idea of committing to a land use plan first and then creating a transportation plan that would support the desired land uses.
Yeah, the only thing that I add on that, though, is I was in Washington, D.C., lived there when they began, well, when the metro was in its first phase, and then went back just a few years ago. And what was fascinating is the same complaints about mass transit there. You know, the train didn't go anywhere that anybody wanted to go yeah. in the early stages. Nobody lives there. Why is the train going there? 30 years later, you go there, and you see that the city has completely redeveloped itself around where the stops are. And it's now a vital element in the area's transportation. The same thing is going to happen here. You build the rail, the development will follow, the density will follow, and it will become a vital part of the community.
Although in terms of the MARTA stations right now, I mean, MARTA's been around for, what, 30 years? And just now it seems like they're finally getting around to doing some of the building around some of the stations. But yeah. I'm amazed it's taken as long as it has in this city.
Yeah, that's followed a number of years of city and county councils and commissions refusing to grant applications for building dense developments around the stations.
Amazing. One topic that Randy suggested, which I thought was a little bit funny and very appropriate for the season, is whose commercials are worse? Taylor's Execute Everyone commercials, or Sonny's kitchen conversation with his very shocked looking wife. I think we were talking about this, and Joe hadn't seen them yet. But what about the rest of you? Whose commercials are worse?
You know, the folks are talking on the national level about this is the election season of what they're calling the toxic consultants, the consultants that are killing candidates off. With really stupid campaign plans that push candidates in places where they shouldn't be going. That certainly includes the guys who make the commercials. Taylor, of course, his problem is not just the commercial, but that the content of the commercial runs contrary to, or appears to, those folks in the Democratic Party and what their core beliefs are. So it's as if he thinks he's already locked up his base and now he's going after Sonny's, and there's at least from my observation, it's not apparent that he's locked up his base yet. Sonny's is the other side of the coin, just very, very hokey and appealing really solidly to the Republican base. And I thought it was sort of a funny way to work your wife into a commercial. you know, she, of course, is completely charming. They have been married for 30-plus years. But it still comes off as really hokey. I would be concerned about any family that had a conversation like that over breakfast.
It's also funny because there's a parody on the net right now. You can find it on YouTube, which basically puts an audio track over the ad, and it's a Levitra commercial. And you know, Mary Perdue having this conversation about how Sonny do on Levitra, and you know, the ad actually looks like it could have been an erectile dysfunction ad, so it was kind of funny to see that juxtaposition, and just, well, I was gonna say, just in terms of what you were saying about Taylor appealing strongly to the conservative base, I mean, a lot of what I hear is mostly from bloggers, and you know, obviously, I can't say that I think that bloggers are necessarily representative of Georgia voters or even Georgia Democratic voters. But he certainly—I'm not saying that, you know, as a relatively liberal voter that I'm that excited about him. I mean, I'll probably vote for him, but it certainly doesn't. His ads don't make me want to rush out to the polls and vote early for him. That's for sure. So. It's not, yeah, okay, well, I agree, you know, tough penalties for child molesters, but it's certainly not an issue that I think anyone would disagree with or that particularly is shocking or energizing to even conservatives, really.
One of the things that struck me, if you're the kind of person who thinks that a child molester it should be executed after the second child they molest, why are you waiting for the second one?
That is kind of strange, isn't it?
Right. If you think that it's appropriate,
it's so heinous.
That's right. If it's so heinous and so appropriate for that it's appropriate to execute the first one, why are you waiting for them to do it a second time?
Yeah, it's bizarre. Well, finally, one thing that kind of has heated me up this week has been the Georgia tags that were unveiled at the Secretary of State, but they were unveiled by Sonny and his staff, I guess, a little over a week ago. And when I saw the design, I just looked at it, and it was the most bland, boring, you know, it's a blue plate. It's got the Georgia seal on it. It's just, you know, Georgia.gov. It's nothing that would make me want to come to Georgia if I saw it driving, you know, on the streets of another city. It doesn't really make me, it wouldn't make me feel proud to be living in Georgia. And I think that, you know, on top of that, I'm not really sure why that I'd be happy to switch my current Georgia on my mind plate with that ugly monstrosity.
See, I've seen rumblings that it's some sort of conspiracy where somebody is making a lot of money off of these tag changes every few years. Because it seems to me, I know at least in California, until recently at least, you could use any valid tag that you had bought at any point. And when they changed the design, it only affected people who bought a new car or who moved into the state or whatever. But it seems like in Georgia, maybe some metal works contractor is in the pocket or has the, you know, the somebody.
There is. It's called 3M.
Is it?
Yeah, 3M makes the reflective materials that's used on license plates.
And they are a contributor to whose campaign?
Everybody.
Well,
I only know from Florida. I can tell you that in Florida they used to have a cabinet government. This was just until a few years ago. And all seven statewide elected officials sat over the Board of Motor Vehicles, and they would change the tag, I think, every 6 years. They would change the design. And this was like the World Series of poker, watching these seven statewide elected officials, you know, make their decision as which new tag. They would have these giant 6x8 boards up with artistic representations of what the new tag would look like. There was horse trading, you know, beyond belief. Everybody had latched onto a favorite play, but you didn't want anybody to know who you were supporting or what tag you were supporting. The same thing goes on here in states. I think what they were trying to do was just shortcut that process, pick one, and see if everybody would just say, yeah, okay. And what they heard was everybody saying, no, not okay. And so they're going to find themselves in the process now where you come up with some really crummy selection process.
And we're going to have the state flag all over again.
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably.
When I was in high school, I took driving lessons, and our instructor at some point, you know, kind of told the class, you know, every car is a piece of junk, you know, because eventually they'll all wind up in the junkyard. And I was like, yeah, you know what? You're right. That's so true. So I don't really look at any car and say, oh, wow, that's a beautiful car. And so whatever the license plate looks like, the blue plate special, the Georgia.gov on my mind, whatever, you know, whatever.
Well,
you have it.
You're
your
absolutely
way.
Right. Everything is something that's about to be rusted and trashed. but, you know, when you stop and think at it from just a political standpoint, it's probably the second biggest investment everybody makes in their life, the first one being buying a home, the second one being buying a car. We allow our car, I know, I shouldn't even call it investment. I hope that's what you're laughing at.
Yeah.
You allow it to define your personality. In fact, they sell the cars, you know, we all have heard of, you know, chick cars and guy cars and you know, hot cars and slow lane cars. And we allow these cars to define our personality or vice versa.
And don't forget the smart car that's coming to America next year.
The smart car, absolutely. So it's it should be expected, and any political person should look at this process and see that this is this is going to be accessorizing this vehicle that creates your identity.
And like Garrett said, I don't really see the need to have this process every few years. I mean, other than the fact that our politicians are being paid off to do this, because it's not like looking at a tag, you automatically know it's a Georgia tag because we've got multiple types of tags here. So, you know, well, you know, you've got the one for the hunters, you've got the one for the animal lovers, you've got, you know, breast cancer, you've got
university tags,
all the university tags. So just to me, it seems kind of pointless. And I agree that probably we shouldn't be making everyone switch out their tags every however many years it is.
You know, I'm a states' rights guy, but if the federal government were to come in and say everyone has to have, like, you know, like the European tags that are just the numbers, I'd probably be okay with that. It's just ridiculous to even be wasting, you know, all of the the seven nights of the apocalypse around the table discussing these things or whatever they
but
are.
But it's a marketing opportunity.
Right.
Well, you know, that's true, though. I mean, people are going to judge us, at least in part, by, you know, buy those kinds of things. And I mean, if we've got a really ugly, boring
tag, you know what, if you're judging us by our license plate, seriously, just it's the numbers.
It's by the license plate and by the movie Deliverance and Designing Women.
We will be forever defined by this. Yes. And Ted Turner, right? Yeah.
So yeah, well, I looks like it's about time to wrap this up. I want to thank everyone for taking the time out of their night to come here and do this podcast. And I'd like to go around the table and have final thoughts. Start with Garrett.
I once again appreciate everyone listening on the other side of the coin, and want to thank the Georgia Podcast Network for hosting us, as always.
Yes, thank you to Amber and Rusty. My final thoughts are to look out in the toward the end of October. The Atlanta Coalition for Performing Arts is producing the Georgia Open Arts Festival. In fact, on October 1st, you can get free tickets to any number of theaters throughout the metro Atlanta area for a free night of theater, which will be taking place on that Thursday evening, the last weekend of October.
Okay.
And go to georgiaperforms.com for more information.
Great. And my final thought is going to be this time next month, we'll be coming up on the eve of the election. The Atlanta Press Club debates will be airing. I think they begin airing 1 month from now. And I think the excitement is going to be 1 month from now. Are we going to be watching the last wheel come off the Democratic Party cart? Or are we going to see them actually getting their act together and making something happen?
Jim Martin saves it all.
That may be the only thing they have happening.
Well, I want to thank once again everyone for being here. Thank you to Rusty and Amber for hosting us, and thank you to all of you for listening. This is a Georgia Politics Podcast.